the creation of human being. Yes. Is there any difference between man and woman? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Allah says we have created insan, human being, in the best of forms. And of course, in some translations, you may find man in translating al-insan. Yes. And we know that in English language also,
yes,
in many cases, man is used, but human being is intended.
Yes, it is. It means the man or the human being.
Exactly. So the same is true about some of the verses in the Noble Book of Quran. Although in this verse, Allah doesn't say Rajul, for example,
yes,
or Dhakar. No,
yes,
al-insan. The human being, male or female, are created in best of the forms.
That's all right.
And when it comes to the, the reason for sending the prophets, the divine books, including the Noble Book of Quran, Allah says that the aim is for purifying human beings. Again, no difference between man and woman.
That's right.
So this is the, structure, the discourse dominant in the Noble Book of Quran. Now the question is that if this is the case, then why many verses are in masculine form?
Yes.
For example, Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu.
Yes.
Alladhina is for the males. Amanu is for,
yes,
masculine form.
And according, we know that to the Arabic structure, which is very much different from the New English world, we can say the masculine and feminine pronouns are derivated,
exactly,
and this has to be taken into account,
yeah,
also,
sure,
in the translation. So it is very much, we can say, different from, as we said, the formal official language, which is English, which,
mm-hmm,
is, we can say, the Arabic language is very much different, okay?
Before going to Arabic language and referring to some points about some of the features of this language when it comes to the gender, I think when it comes to English language too, forget about these last years. In,
yes,
the past, when they wanted to mention some, rules and principles, and they wanted to include both men and women, they referred to the rules in masculine form.
That's right.
It's only in the recent years that we are used to say he or she, and sometimes
his hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Or one, someone,
and,
that's right.
Yeah, exactly. And that is because of the fact that some women have come to become very sensitive about,
yes,
why we are not mentioned,
yes,
specifically. But in the past, it wasn't the case.
Yes.
Masculine pronouns were used, but they meant both men and women. To some extent, this is the case in Arabic language. So first of all, we know that in the Noble Book of Quran, the Quran explicitly mentions that it is revealed in Arabic language. So,
yes,
when this is the case, then the Arabic rules rules of grammar should be,
that's right,
followed.
Yes.
So first of all, in Arabic language, when you have a group of people and you want to address them, there are a number of men and a number of women. Even if the women outnumber the men. Even if there is one man among a couple of women, then the pronouns, the verbs, all of them should be in masculine form.
That's right.
So this is a grammatical point in Arabic language.
That's
it,
right,
has nothing to do with Islam, with the Noble Book of Quran.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, 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 you'll find your way.
And there has to be harmony between the verb, the pronoun of the verb, and also we can say the other parts of the speech.
That's the point.
In a sentence. That's
so, as I mentioned, if you are in a meeting, even nowadays there are a number of men and a number of women. Even in today's Arabic, they address all of them with masculine form, and
that's
no,
right,
one is offended. Of course, maybe in future some of the Arab women may be offended, and,
yes,
the people should also use different word. But what is a rule in Arabic language, at least in the old Arabic language, is that if there are a mixed number of men and women, then you need to address them with masculine form.
That's right.
That is why we know that in chapter Al-Ahzab, verse 33, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking about tathir, the verse of purification,
yes.
And we know that we have the Holy Prophet, Imam Ali, and Imam Hassan, and Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, and Lady Zahra, salamullahi
yes.
alayha. But all the verbs and pronouns are in masculine form.
Yes.
إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمْ كُمْ is for,
yes.
A group of men. عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْسَ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَهِرَكُمْ again. So that is a rule in Arabic language. So the Quran, when it is addressing all Muslims, men and women, in many cases it may use the masculine form, but it doesn't mean that the women are not
included.
And they
yes.
are excluded. No.
Yes.
This is a rule in Arabic language. So ya ayyuhalladhina amanu also means, I mean, ya ayyuhallati amanda, for example.
Okay.
Both men and women are
yes.
Included. And it is against the rhetoric of the Quran
That's
to
right.
mention both genders, both
yes.
masculine and feminine form in all the cases. We have few exceptions, of course. I will
yes.
come to that.
Yes.
But as a general rule, in most of the cases in which the masculine forms, pronouns, verbs are used, it also refers to women as well. This
That's
is one point.
Okay.
The second point is that some people, some researchers believe that this rule in Arabic language has some roots in the somehow chastity of, Arab people.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, imagine that... you are in a family and then some strangers come to you and you want to mention the name of your wife, for example. So in many cases, in the Arabic culture, the chastity requires them not to even mention the name of their wife, for example, in front of the strangers. And even they may address them with other names. So some people believe that maybe the reason that, in such cases, if we have a group of men and women, the words, the pronouns, everything is in masculine form, it is because of this ghayra, this chastity that Arab people, they
That's
were
right.
Observing, and it could be considered a good culture, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
being a prophet as a man, Prophet Muhammad does not have any interference in selecting, for example, the masculine language or discourse over the whole text.
In
of the Holy.
Some of the verses, the Holy Prophet specifically is addressed,
mm-hmm.
and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking to the Prophet, Ya ayyuhan nabi, qul.
Yes.
In that case, all the words should be in masculine form.
Yes.
Qul, not quli.
Yes.
But when it comes to the general verses of the Quran, the fact that the Prophet is a man has nothing to do with
yes.
The masculine forms of the words and the verses. So we can say that to at least for some verses, the same chastity has been observed in the Noble Book of Quran too. So for example, imagine that we have a group of young women and young girls and young boys, and both of them, they are among the poor people, and they are not able to get married.
Yes.
And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to tell them that in under such cases, you need to, be continent, you need to observe chastity.
Yes.
So, based on this culture that I explained, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not directly talking to the girls to preserve their chastity. I mean, it's not a good culture to address the girls and say that you are not able to get married because of poverty. So, observe chastity. In this case, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is using masculine form. For example, in chapter Nur, verse 33, وَلْيَسْتَحْفِفِ الَّذِينَ لَا يَجِدُونَ نِكَاحًا حَتَّى يُغْنِيَهُمُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِهِ Those who cannot afford marriage should be continent, should observe chastity until Allah enriches them out of His grace. So it was possible for God also to mention the feminine form.
That's
but
right.
But it is against that good culture that I explained to preserve the dignity and chastity
yes.
of women.
Okay.
This is another point. There are a couple of remaining points that I think we need to share in the following session.
Inshallah. Thank you very much. Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding this topic. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir/en/call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Beruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Braving the bone-chilling weather, mourners are remembering those who gave their lives for the future of this region and beyond.
These people gathered here to pay tribute to martyrs to the war against the key terrorist groups in the region who were backed by the U.S.
General Qasem Soleimani was remembered as a hero for humanity, who transcended geographical and ethnic boundaries, and whose campaign against the Daesh terrorist groups saved every Muslim and non-Muslim country, including Pakistan.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani.
Martyr Qasem Soleimani is a way of life and a school of thought to fight the enemies of the Muslim world and the East. If the world of Islam and countries in the East want to save themselves from the malicious designs of the West aimed at breaking this region into pieces to create its new world order, then they have to follow Qasem Soleimani and the strategies he used to save the West Asia region from the collapse.
Speakers at the gathering shed light on different dimensions of martyr Soleimani's life and his legacy, as well as how it impacted the region.
The U.S. and its Western allies had remained helpless and in despair in the face of global terrorism. Martyr Qasem Soleimani put an end to the darkness of this hopelessness vis-a-vis U.S.-backed Takfiri terrorism.
Some 70,000 Pakistani citizens have been killed at the hands of U.S.-backed Takfiri terrorists, including in attacks on schools and children. These were the same terrorists that General Soleimani took out in an anti-terror campaign for which he will always be remembered. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
The two-year anniversary of the election integrity protest, which burst into Congress on January 6, 2020, has been overshadowed by Congress's historic failure to select the third most important post in the country, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. After more than a dozen votes, mainstream Republican Kevin McCarthy finally won a majority, ending the total paralysis of the new Congress. However, the embarrassing stalemate was the worst of its kind since before the American Civil War.
Both of them just show how American politics is dominated by spectacle and political theater, while Americans who are suffering through terrible economic hardship right now and are politically polarized are just sitting on the sidelines while all this plays out.
As the speaker chaos continued, Democrats demanded attention for 2020, while Republican lawmakers largely ignored the anniversary. The stark difference isn't surprising. Polls have long shown that 35% of the country still calls the events of January 6th a legitimate protest, while 50% still calls it an insurrection. The subsequent January 6th committee to investigate the incident was either branded a political show trial and witch hunt or a necessary defense of American-style democracy.
It should have been a bipartisan inquiry, a serious one, into what was, you know, supposedly this, you know, vast constitutional violation by Trump and his campaign and his administration. And it's just become this endless commercial for the Democratic Party, which is totally bankrupt. And 2 years later, they're still using it to, you know, try and get themselves elected.
While Washington is repeatedly faulted for encouraging protests in other countries, almost 200 January 6th protesters have been sentenced to prison terms. Seemingly every participant has been publicly hunted down, which may serve as a chilling effect which forestalls future protests. Has Washington's response to the controversial events of January 6, 2020 reduced conflict, division, and disunity? We cannot ask Congress, because just like 2 years ago, they cannot meet in peace. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
It's afternoon, and many Rohingya women are waiting in a queue to receive blankets offered by an NGO. Some are angry since they haven't received any blankets yet. Over the last few days, northern India has had freezing weather, and that has heaped misery of homelessness for the refugees living in makeshift tents. Zahid Hussain has come out of his shanty to have some sunlight. He says he's worried as his child has developed a skin disease that's getting worse and worse. He asked me to come to his shanty, where he is living with his family in appalling conditions.
My child is very sick. He got some skin disease. God knows what it is. But doctors say it's chickenpox or measles. He is very irritated due to uneasiness of skin. The day starts with his sickness, and all day long it's silently killing him with fevers and chills. Once a doctor from some NGO came here and gave medicine, but nothing worked.
Activists say such treatment of the community is against the Indian ethos of Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which translates to the world is one family. In recent years, a vicious expulsion campaign has shed more light on the way India treats specific communities. Rights activists have been urging the government to adopt a uniform refugee policy which treats refugees equally, regardless of their faith or ethnicity. Thousands of Rohingya refugees in India are braving the cold weather and live in makeshift tents across the Indian subcontinent. These people, who always face the threat of detention and deportation, are here struggling for survival.
In this camp, children are getting sick and the sickness is unusual. They are getting chills, vomiting and fever. We have never seen this skin disease before. Even after visiting the doctor, the children are not getting any better. In every family, you will find children with this sickness. Now even women and men are getting affected. It's a very dangerous situation. Some say the sickness is spread to other camps. Doctors have advised us not to have guests from other camps and not to visit them.
Many refugees I spoke with shared heart-wrenching stories with me, and most of them kept asking why their voice is not being heard in the age of technology. Based on official estimates, India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees, but independent reports suggest the real figure stands at hundreds of thousands. Rohingya Muslims are being treated as illegal immigrants in India and elsewhere after fleeing Myanmar. Activists in India have stressed the urgent need to protect the Rohingyas' rights as refugees. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
The inflation rate in Italy has been high for a while,
breaking record after record. An increasing number of Italians are struggling to make ends meet, fearing that the cost of living pinch could soon turn into pain. The National Bureau of Statistics recently announced that the prices in the country rose more than 8% year on year in 2022, jumping to its highest 12-month gain in 37 years.
It is impossible to continue this way. Gas and electricity bills have more than doubled, and the cost of bread and milk is going mad. This is pure madness.
Italy's annual inflation rate in December dropped to 11.6%, down from 11.8% in November, but the cost of living crisis keeps biting businesses and households hard. High energy prices caused by energy supply challenges that followed the Ukraine-Russia war is the main factor contributing to this surge.
The immediate loss of this situation has been the collapse of purchasing power by over 10%, which translates to the net loss of one monthly payment for employed workers. People on low income wages, such as employees and workmen, which represents 90% of the labour force, are among those suffering the most.
Analysts believe that a combination of high inflation, rising interest rates and a lack of fiscal support will push Italy and other EU economies into recession.
Month after month, life is becoming increasingly tough. My retirement payment went up 50 euros 2 months ago, but the cost of living has increased by 200 euros each month.
Life is more expensive for those who live on one income only. The cost of renting houses, buying clothes for our kids, food. I can't see how we'll be able to face all this.
With the aim to fight high inflation and put prices under control, the European Central Bank has raised interest rates. The move is likely to hamper the European economy further. Some ministers in the Italian government have strongly criticized the ECB over its aggressive monetary policy that they believe could raise the prospect of recession. Max Civili, Rome.
A mass rally has been staged in the Yemeni capital along with several other Yemeni provinces called Al-Hisar Harb Alayna, which translates to, the siege is war upon us. Yemen is experiencing one of the worst humanitarian crises in history due to what protesters call the U.S. and Saudi Arabia strangling blockade on innocent civilians. Demonstrators called for an immediate end to the blockade and the ongoing war.
We came out in this blessed protest to tell the aggressors and their allies that their blockade is a war on us. Therefore, we, the Yemeni people, say if you do not lift your blockade, we will certainly teach you a lesson you will never forget. We will not sit back and watch our people starve to death.
We came out to deliver a message to the world that we will no longer remain silent on this aggression, war and blockade on our people.
Yemen's military spokesperson reiterated this week that if the Saudi-led coalition fails to lift the blockade, the Yemeni army will have no choice but to use military force to break the siege. Protesters in Sana'a expressed that it's time to use the military card, since the Saudi-led coalition continues to seize Yemeni fuel ships in the Red Sea.
We came out today to tell our military forces to go ahead and strike the capital cities of our enemies so they can be forced to leave the blockade by the will of Allah. Only then they will live in disgrace and humility.
The protest comes after a week of violence stemming from the continuous Saudi shelling in the northern province of Sa'da, which has killed and injured dozens of civilians over the past 2 weeks. Furthermore, Saudi Arabia continues to seize and detain Yemeni fuel ships in the Red Sea, preventing them from reaching the port of Hodeidah and unloading the much-needed fuel supply.
The Saudi-led coalition attacked Yemen in 2015, declaring they would defeat the Ansar Allah movement and their allies within a matter of weeks. It is now 2023, and they have not achieved any of their goals. This as the Yemeni government based in Sana'a continues to advance its military deterrence capabilities. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
St. Pancras Station, one of London's biggest and busiest. But not today.
A 48-hour strike by train drivers, preceded by another 48-hour walkout by other rail workers, meant travel misery for thousands. The dispute between ASLEF and the RMT Rail Workers Union on the one hand, and the employer Network Rail and train operating companies on the other, is largely over pay and the impact of inflation on workers' wages. The disagreements have kept a deal elusive for months.
Well, we want to hear movement on the issue about some of the conditions they've put down in Network Rail. That's a restructuring of all our members' terms and conditions. And it's a similar recipe in the train operating companies. They've gone for a thing called driver-only operation, which we think is extremely unhelpful. We can't accept that. And, of course, we'd like an improvement in the pay offers.
Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has so far refused to meet with the unions to try and hammer out a deal and has instead vowed to get tough on the strikes. His government is also accused of trying to turn public opinion against the strikers. But there's no sign of that happening yet.
I think workers are well within their rights to demand at least living wages to be kept in line with inflation. So, yeah, I'm fully supportive of this.
I really sympathise. I think they're right. So I'm not mad. It's inconvenient.
The UK economy is experiencing the combined effects of Brexit, the war in Ukraine, and its effect on energy costs, as well as inflationary pressure on the post-pandemic recovery. And rail workers are not the only ones complaining.
ASLEF and the RMT are two of the UK's most powerful unions, able to bring their railway service to a standstill during industrial disputes. And the concerns they have been raising about the difference between people's pay packets and the cost of living at the moment are shared by many different industries and professions.
Nurses, ambulance drivers, teachers, postal workers, driving examiners and the like all have pay deals with the government in the pipelines and are likely to be offered less than the rate of inflation. And that means the UK's winter of discontent is likely to drag on. Saeed Puriza, London.
While the world celebrates the start of a new year with festivities and a display of fireworks, Yemen ushers in the new year with fireworks from artillery shelling by the Saudi-led coalition. In just the first hours of 2023, Saudi Arabia carried out a series of artillery shelling in northern Yemen close to Saudi borders. According to the reports, at least 18 innocents were injured in the latest attacks. This comes after a year of bloodshed, according to the Humanity Eye Center for Rights and Development. In their latest report for the year 2022, the center revealed statistics of war crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition. According to the report, over 3,000 Yemenis were killed and injured in 2022. Humanity Eye Center statistic and research analyst Gais Jamal reports that these crimes occurred near the Saudi border during a ceasefire.
In the year 2022, most of the crimes were committed on residents living in bordering districts with Saudi Arabia, despite the announcement of a ceasefire. The only thing that stopped was the airstrikes. However, Saudi rockets and artillery shelling continued. There was no ceasefire in the districts near the Saudi border. From the first day the ceasefire was announced, the attacks continued until this day.
Saudi Arabia and its coalition also attacked airports, Yemeni ports, and almost 15,000 homes, livestock farms, and communication stations in 2020, according to the report. Humanity Eye says it has all the evidence to prove that Saudi-led coalition committed war crimes on a mass scale.
We have met with French rights groups and presented to them reports with evidence that expose how Saudi Arabia and its allies and European states played a direct role in supporting Saudi Arabia with weapons that were used to commit war crimes on Yemenis. We presented all necessary evidence to this French rights group, and they have filed a case in court against Mohammed bin Salman and bin Zayed for the war crimes committed. This case is currently pending.
The European legal system is unlikely to bring any Saudi or UAE official to justice. which is why Yemenis want justice now.
We are calling on our government to take tough military actions against the aggressors. They are occupying our lands, destroying our homes and killing us, and we will not remain silent for much longer. We are a free Yemeni nation with a great civilization. We have the right to defend ourselves.
The Yemeni people are suffering from the blockade and the oppression being spearheaded by Saudi Arabia. Therefore, we call on the Yemeni government to take decisive actions now to lift the blockade and end the suffering of the people.
As the conflict enters a new year, tensions are steadily rising on all active battlefronts in Yemen between Saudi-led forces and the Yemeni army. If a peaceful resolution is not reached soon, an all-out war is likely to ensue.
Pressure is beginning to mount on the Yemeni government to end the blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition as millions of Yemenis continue to suffer. Yemenis we spoke with are calling on the Ansar Allah movement to end the siege now by any means necessary. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Almost two-thirds of manufacturers in Britain fear blackouts this winter amid the fallout from the energy crisis, according to a new industry survey. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg news agency has covered the story and tells us more. Britain's manufacturing firms say they're likely to cut jobs and production due to a surge in energy costs, even though the government has extended support. Make UK, the industry's lobby group, flagged energy costs as the biggest concern of its members in a survey of 235 companies last November. Almost two-thirds of employers said they were concerned about the risk of blackouts, according to the research done with the consulting firm PwC. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, this week is due to confirm how much the government will cut its energy aid for companies, which the Treasury says is unsustainably expensive. Make UK's warning indicates the scale of pain manufacturers are suffering, with soaring inflation and a darkening outlook for Britain's economy. The biggest risk remains the eye-watering increases in energy costs, which has left the clock ticking for many companies. Stephen Phipson, Chief Executive Officer at Make UK, said on Monday. Phipson added, "While an extension of the energy relief scheme will be welcome, to date it has not just been a sticking plaster. Making it less generous will make the situation worse for many companies." While natural gas and electricity prices have tumbled in recent weeks, the cost of gas in Europe and Asia remains five times higher than in the United States, and in comparison to pre-pandemic times. Most companies surveyed don't expect the measures due to be announced will be sufficient to protect their profits. The government's energy bill relief scheme provided some breathing room for 6 months. The Treasury last week signalled that the program will be scaled back from April of 2023. Early reports indicate the government's support for businesses on energy will fall by around 85% from current levels, piling further pressure onto manufacturers at a time when supply chain disruptions, labour shortages and higher borrowing costs are crippling firms. We face another 12 months where it's likely that global supply chains will remain stretched and a string of pressure points will continue to spring up, added Kara Haffi, the manufacturing leader at PwC United Kingdom. Kara Haffi added, "Given the scale of the cost challenges and the backdrop of a long winter, it is imperative that the right balance is struck." The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the story and tells us more. Almost two-thirds of manufacturers in Britain fear blackouts this winter amid the fallout from the energy crisis, according to a new industry survey, as concerns grow about government plans to cut financial support for businesses. As the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, prepares to announce a sharp reduction in industry support, the trade body, Make UK, said the impact from sky-high energy costs on manufacturers showed no sign of abating. The industry group, which represents 20,000 UK manufacturers, said cutting financial support would exacerbate job losses and reduce factory output, hurting the economy. Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt is expected to unveil a package of measures this week to help businesses with high energy costs, including the extension of a scheme beyond its March expiry date. However, the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, told bosses in a crunch meeting last week that the current measures are unsustainably expensive and will be replaced at a lower cost. According to a survey of more than 200 senior manufacturing industry bosses by Make UK and the accountancy firm PwC, almost three-quarters of companies, or 70% of companies, expect their energy costs to increase this year, with two-thirds saying they expect to cut production or cut jobs as a result. In the latest business surveys by accounting and business advisory firm BDO, employers also signalled plans to pause recruitment amid concerns about a recession, with firms struggling with high inflation and supply chain pressures. Make UK found as many as 60% of bosses had grown increasingly concerned about blackouts affecting their business, while almost two-thirds, or 64%, said higher energy costs posed the biggest risk to their company. More than 13% have specifically considered closing the business or implementing shutdowns, with more than 1 in 10 considering relocating production to another country where energy costs are cheaper. Despite heightened concern among industry leaders, wholesale energy prices have fallen sharply over recent weeks after a period of relatively mild weather in Britain as well as in Europe. Economists at HSBC said falling prices could benefit businesses and help to bring down inflation. Elizabeth Martin, a senior economist at HSBC Bank, said assuming only minimal additional support from April, then this drop in gas prices will be critically important for many businesses. Stephen Phipson, the chief executive of Make UK, said that existing levels of government support were an inadequate sticking plaster, with manufacturers also struggling with ongoing supply chain disruption, labour shortages, political uncertainty, and high transportation costs. Stephen Phipson, the chief executive of Make UK, said making it less generous will make the situation worse for many companies. In fact, there is a very strong and urgent case for matching the more generous schemes our competitors have in place. Government must also ensure that all major users of energy are included in any extension, not just those traditionally regarded as energy intensive. Otherwise, there are some very significant companies that will fall through the cracks. Low confidence among British companies about the economic outlook and problems with productivity are making them reluctant to hire new staff, according to BDO's latest business survey. Businesses' hiring intentions slumped to a two-year low, the weakest reading since the final quarter of 2020 when they were facing new COVID restrictions, according to the firm's employment index. This was despite firms reporting slightly improved levels of output and business confidence to BDO in December. Kayleigh Crosthwaite from BDO said, inflation and supply chain pressures are clearly being felt across the board as employers pause recruitment plans and consider redundancies to manage rising costs.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in Hull.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners and my dear sister Asma.
Yes, did you get you?
Oh my gosh, this
yes,
is
let's
your
remember
station.
Brother Muzaffar as well.
Yeah, he is really, you know, missed here, I think.
Of course, yes. We're missing you in here, so come back very soon after your exams.
Exactly. So this is your station as always.
Yeah, my this is home
place.
Again.
I want to ask you a kind of beautiful question. What kind of person you are?
Well, now this is such a very difficult question to
I
answer
know that.
Because I'm not a small thing to be said in just a sentence.
So you are telling me that you're too complicated to
yes,
just
yes,
describe
there's
in
a
one
lot
sentence.
To me.
Okay.
Yes, there's a lot to me. But if you mean about the fact that am I a spontaneous person mm-hmm. or...
Somehow introvert or extrovert, or you want to express your feelings or you want to hide them or bury them in your soul.
I actually cannot hide my feelings at all.
I know that.
Yes. Even if I want to, then my eyes are going to reveal everything.
Yeah.
So now you tell me what kind of a person you are.
It's a bit difficult for me because I think I have some bipolar or something like that feelings. Sometimes I want to express my feelings to the point that, you know, I want to go out in the street and shout and cry and tell whatever I want.
So you cannot hide your feelings.
No, sometimes I'm in this mood. And the other time, you know, I'm really too introvert that I just wonder, how can I be this introvert? How can I not express my feelings about anything?
And that's why you call it bipolar.
Yeah, exactly. And but I think we should find a balance point
of course,
in this issue.
Yeah.
First, let me ask you, which one is better?
To always show your feelings or to hide it? Well, I also stand with the fact that you mentioned there must be a balance.
You know, sometimes, you cannot, you know, always be balanced.
Yeah.
This is a bit of cliche. We know that we cannot do
No, see, it's not cliche. It's human being. Just the way you said it, sometimes I become such an extrovert person that I don't believe that I could be such an extrovert person. So it depends on your mood, and sometimes you're not in mood of hiding your feelings. When you hate someone, you're not in mood to just hide it from them. You see what I say? There must be a balance between whatever you feel inside yourself. I always say that being a human is very difficult because sometimes you have to control your emotions, though it's very difficult to do.
I know what you mean, but you know, the thing I want to tell you is that we cannot always decide by our mood. Mm-hmm. There are other factors, too, which are so important, and then we're going to discuss them after a short break.
Of course.
Stay tuned. Talking about emotions and expressing them, that, you know, we all came to this conclusion that, okay, there should be a balance.
Yeah, there must be
but,
a balance.
But, you know, how should we decide, you know, from which kind of factors we have to achieve to this balance?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is your mood, your feeling, I don't know, your desire that you
want to
be this
way. See, it is
way,
about, I guess, maturity. See, it's maturity.
Nice. Yeah.
I would say...
I'm not mature.
What?
I'm not mature, I think.
No. It doesn't have anything to do with that.
With age,
literal.
I know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, maturity comes with experience. Sometimes you're 15, mm-hmm. yet you have had so much of experiences that you are mature enough to understand that in this occasion, you have to control it. You have to rein it in. But some other times, you're in your 30s and still you do not know in which occasion you have to keep it for yourself and in which occasion you have to explode. And, you know, I'm just talking about songs of experience, you know, I'm singing songs of experience. I do believe that those people who have a control upon their feelings and emotions and they can be restrained sometime or keep everything that they feel inside themselves are powerful people.
I do agree with this word of experience, but experience is not everything.
Yeah, of course.
If you want to experience everything to be the person you have to be, I think it takes a long time. We don't have this time in our lives.
By experience, you know what I mean? Sometimes you do not have to go to a battlefield to understand how a sad experience it is.
I understand.
Sometimes,
this is maturity, so...
So, the maturity that I talked out of experience was coming even with education.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you read too much of books, when you talk to too much of people and then you listen to all of them, then you would develop such a maturity that is going to help you too much.
You are telling a beautiful hint, but the thing is, we have many educated people. You know, they are sad. They're depressed.
See, I'm going to tell you another thing right in here. I do not mean to be offensive, but I do feel that not all educated people go between the lines of whatever they read. Sometimes these educated people, our professor once told us that some educated people are just like an ocean that has got a centimeter of depth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You might know too much of things, but still you're not deep enough to understand things. Sometimes you are just going on the very surface.
And I think there is another point of view about this issue, and this is sometimes you are too deep to understand what surrounds you.
Yeah.
Sometimes you go through, I don't know, education, work, and whatever that much, that obsessively, that, you know, there is a moment that you come to yourself and you just tell yourself, oh, come on, where am I?
Yeah.
You know?
A moment of alienation.
Exactly. And you feel strange. You feel mm-hmm. you are strange to yourself, to everything around you and other people. And and at this time, I think most probably you're struggling with depression and so on. Yeah. And this depression, I think, comes from not expressing your feelings at the right times in the past.
Now, you're mentioning a very nice point. Yeah. This is very true. So when we say control your feelings, I say it actually to myself. Mm-hmm. I many times say it to myself because not always you're going to find it beneficial to explode your feelings. Sometimes you have to keep it in and rein it in and control it. But yeah. again, the thing that you said is very right. There are, I mean, psychological studies, they say you should not keep your feelings for too long inside yourself. There must be a place, there must be a time for you to just pour it all out.
Another thing which is really important is the atmosphere that we have in society, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are some taboos, some a society yeah. which doesn't allow you to express your feelings and emotions in the right way, and you feel like you're going to explode. And this feeling is awful. I think we have to be exploded.
Yeah.
We have to go through this experience of, I don't know, expressing our feelings to show to other people this is a taboo, which mm-hmm. is not true.
Yeah, now some people might call it this way, that it is more healthier,
yeah.
considering the psychological point. It's much healthier to just reveal all your feelings.
No.
But we are not talking about this, because we already talked about moderation and balance.
Exactly.
There must be a balance, but even those people who are too much introvert and who are keeping too much of things, after a certain time, they might feel that they are facing a pile of emotion inside of themselves and they do not know what they have to do with them.
And another thing which I think occurs in this situation is that sometimes introvert people want to actually express their feelings and emotions, but, you know, if they do that, they will show another perspective, another personality of themselves. Mm-hmm. Which is not accepted by other people around them.
So you mean that the other people
yeah.
would think of them that now they are
exactly.
going crazy.
Exactly, who are they?
Yeah.
And let's keep it a cliffhanger, then we're going to come back and talk about
such
it.
Such a nice cliffhanger.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We were talking about the introvert people who just want to express their emotions and so mm-hmm. on, but they have the fear of being someone else.
Yeah. And let me tell you something, just for the record.
Yeah.
It's not always about the introvert people. Sometimes even an extrovert person
wanna
can
be
keep
introvert.
Their feelings for too long. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Now, you might think that this person is so vivacious. They're full of energy. They're sharing every single thing. They talk
exactly.
about every single detail of their life.
But
that's
don't.
Not the truth, because I have seen so much of extrovert people that they have some personal private moments in which they share it to some special people. But in those moments, you would understand that human beings are so, so big of an ocean, you know?
Yeah.
They keep so much of things inside. And sometimes these pile of feelings and emotions to be kept inside is going to be a drudgery, and
mm-hmm.
it would lead to some mental issues, you know?
I do agree with that. And I think there should be two kinds of personalities,
mm-hmm.
you know, about this issue. The first one is about ourselves, that we have to keep this moderation and
yeah.
balance in our behavior and so on. And the other fact, the other part is the society, the people around us, which they have to understand that we are human beings. We are not all same all the time.
Yeah.
We can be changed. I don't know, we can change from an introvert to an
so
extrovert.
So you mean that we shouldn't be scared of the image that people are going to get
yeah,
out of us
exactly.
when we show our feeling. Yeah, that's very true.
And the
I
reaction
agree.
That we have to the change that we see in other people around us
exactly.
should be actually normal.
Yeah. I remember when we had in university, we had some friends that they were so extrovert. In a way
yeah.
that it was so
hyper energy that
you can. Yeah, yeah. In a way that it was so, you know, offending other people. Because sometimes when you reveal all of your emotions, inevitably you might say things that might hurt other people.
And sometimes you just do it because you want to catch attention from other people.
Exactly, yeah. This is another point. So, I mean, sometimes you are keeping yourself healthy mentally, but you are inflicting misery to other people. Do not make these two things get into the middle of each other when you
there
are
actually...
There
should be a line.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make a mistake between these two things. Yes, you must show your feelings because not all of the feelings have to be taken in, but sometimes you also have to take care of other people's emotion.
Exactly.
Because that's also important. And the heart of a human being is so delicate. And you do not know when it is going to break by a single point that you mention in front of many people.
Then you think it is not important.
Yeah,
you know,
and you think
time.
It's not important. But it actually going to hurt that person a lot. So this is also another important fact that we must take
it
into
is,
notice.
Because I've experienced it so much. Because I'm that much extrovert too. I don't make fun of other people and so on. But, you know, when they do that, I don't care that much. You know, I don't feel like heartbroken or something. But I feel
it offended. Hurts. When we are talking about emotions and feelings and outburst of them, we should also consider other people. And I guess this is the point where we have to control. When we talk about control, it's actually considering other people.
Exactly. You
know. So only when other people are involved, only when I know that other people are going to feel hurt, I am going to control my feeling.
I think there is a road here that, you know, for example, in the left side, we have ourselves and our emotions. And, you know, we have to work on a balance of self-control. And at the right side, we have other people's feelings and emotions that we have to care for them. We have to be careful.
As I grew older, I understood that sometimes you have to say things out loud, though it's very difficult.
You know what? I hate lying, and I think sometimes hiding and concealing something is as the same level as lying, and I don't like it.
Yeah, I know.
It's a beautiful way of lying. When you hide something, but you have to tell the people, it's a beautiful way of lying.
Yeah.
I do agree with that. And I think we have to tell the people in a, I don't know, a polite way.
At least we can do it in a polite, good manner.
A polite and kindly way. Yeah. Especially to the people who, you know, actually are important to us.
Exactly. Those who are dear and we want them to change their behaviors. We have to tell them things because it is going to improve them.
You know, I prefer them being heartbroken for me. Other than, I don't know, being heartbroken by other people or this society or, I don't know, all of the obstacles they're going to face because of this, for example, behavior that I
So you
like.
Mean, again, out of love, it is that we're going to criticize
exactly.
them. We want them to improve and change. So I guess we're getting to the very gist of today's episode. We were talking about, is it always good to explode in people's face and show our feelings or not? And I would say that from the perspective of mental health, it is good. Always it's good to express your feelings, but sometimes you should consider other people's feelings as well, because that also matters as much as your health, as much as your mental health.
Thank you for being here and, you know, discussing this issue with me. And I think the key point is the word balance.
Of course.
Nothing else, nothing more. Thank you for listening to us. This is all the time we have for today's episode.
Yeah.
I bid you farewell and...
Yes, I would bid you farewell as well.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.